CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, this is UBC Arts on Air. I'm your host, Ira Nadell. Each week, we feature the ideas and stories of students and staff within the Faculty of Arts at the University of British Columbia. Wikipedia has been an internet institution for more than a decade, a resource of value for some, of misunderstanding for others. This evening, on UBC Arts on Air, we talk to Alex Sarah Davis, an honors English student completing a study of this sometimes controversial, always newsworthy encyclopedia that has both supporters and critics. Welcome, Alex.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on the show.
Well, what exactly attracted you to Wikipedia as a subject?
Well, you know, I've always been very interested in rhetoric, and one of the things that rhetoric likes to concern itself with is the argument from character or ethos of a speaker. And in this case, if we're looking at Wikipedia, one of the big criticisms that's been levied against the website as a source of information is how it's anonymous and collaborative, and therefore you don't know whether or not to trust the speaker. And it's really interesting from a rhetorical perspective because we don't actually know exactly what's going on when it comes to the ethos of Wikipedia, and that's what I'm interested in studying.
Well, but there's so many voices, I mean, that contribute to Wikipedia. Do you find there is a uniformity, or it's the diversity that actually intrigues you or intrigues anyone when they go to an entry?
No, that's a very interesting question. And in terms of style, in terms of writing style, there are a number of scholars who have done interesting studies about whether or not there is, in fact, a uniformity. It's still a subject up for debate. Obviously, Wikipedia has been around for a decade, but people are just getting around now to studying it. John Jones did a very interesting study looking at the revision process of articles on Wikipedia and seeing if there was sort of a standard revision procedure that happened to writing to see if there was a style. And he found that even though we can't see exactly the credentials or the level of experience that each contributing user has, there does appear to be a kind of uniform encyclopedic style to the writing on that website.
Is there a style sheet if I'm interested in contributing, you know, in entry on something, the ballpoint pen?
Right.
Am I sent a guideline as to what that entry should contain, the format, the length, the tone?
Well, that's a very interesting question, and that's actually one of my favorite parts about studying Wikipedia, is that there the encyclopedia itself has a number of interesting guidelines and documents that are deliberately aimed at contributing users. So I make this distinction between people who visit the website, users, and people who participate on the website, editors. So these articles are aimed specifically at editors, and they talk about things like how to create a new Wikipedia article if there isn't one that exists that covers the topic you are interested in, how to edit an existing article, what sort of criteria those articles need to have and follow. And all of these resources are available through the same source that you are contributing to, which raises an interesting question of, you know, can a source reference itself? It's a hard question to answer. But to go back to your question of, is there a style document? There is, but it's undergoing the same processes of revision that you would be attempting to use it for, which makes it very interesting to study, as you can imagine.
Well, if I do this proposed entry on the ballpoint pen, who owns the entry? What is the situation with copyright? I wrote it.
Right. But there is no copyright. That's the interesting thing about Wikipedia, and nobody owns any of the articles that they post to. So there is a bit of a hierarchy on Wikipedia. It's not as anarchic as we like to pretend it is. It's not as free as we like to pretend it is. So in addition to the users and the editors that I've already mentioned, there are also the ranks of administrator, bureaucrat, and that's the term that they came up with themselves, and steward. And those go from lowest to highest. So administrators have the capability of editing and reverting documents the same way that editors do, but they can also limit access to a certain article and restrict to what extent people can edit it. So that's something that administrators can do. Administrators are appointed by bureaucrats who are supposedly held to only appoint administrators that have a popular consensus that they should be elected to that position. Administrators, bureaucrats, stewards, they're all editors that have been selected by the community and have been appointed by the people above them, except with stewards, they appoint themselves. The stewards oversee the election of new stewards.
So it all sounds very much like George Orwell.
It's interesting in that it's unclear sometimes who has power over who or where there are, in fact, checks and balances, if there are any at all.
What is the actual process? I have this idea that I want to contribute an article on, now we'll refine it a little bit, the BIC pen.
Okay.
Now, so what happens? Do I go on the website and I find a little contributors panel and I write to someone?
So as you are now, I'm assuming you don't have an account on Wikipedia.
No, I don't.
So that means that you're a user or a visitor. So you can go online, you can read any of the articles, you can access any of the pages on Wikipedia, and you can even edit any of the pages on Wikipedia. You actually, without providing any information or credentials about yourself, can edit anything on Wikipedia, almost. Now, there are some exceptions. You, as a visitor or a user, are not allowed to make new articles. That is restricted only to people who have registered. Registration, by the way, just entails affixing a pseudonym or a name and an email address to your account, or you can do something called signing in, or signing your entry, not signing in, rather, which is just providing your name or an IP address to an otherwise anonymous entry, so you don't even have to register. Now, if you were to go online and you wanted to contribute to this article on BIC pens, you could edit the BIC pen article. I'm assuming it's not very controversial, so it likely hasn't been restricted at all. And it's probably not very prone to vandalism, just going off the relatively uncomplicated nature of the BIC pen. So you can, as just a random person on the internet, anyone who has internet access can actually edit that article on the BIC pen without providing any additional information.
But who vets it? Who checks it? Who's going to say, oh, that's a reliable, you know, update or entry on it, as opposed to, oh, that's okay, this person added 250 words to the BIC pen entry.
Uh-huh. Well, there are a couple different systems. The first one that Wikipedia loves to boast about is the wiki technology itself, the wiki software, has a built-in detection of vandalism. And so it's supposedly it vets out obvious attempts to vandalize articles or to replace large blocks of information with a single word repeated over and over and over again, for instance. In addition to those automatic processes of the technology, there's also a huge, it's just absolutely enormous volunteer base that goes through these articles. And there are certain systems in place that make it easier for those volunteers to take a look at and vet recent changes. So, for instance, there's a page that lists all of the recent edits to Wikipedia, and then somebody can be theoretically watching over that page, and when they see that you've made an edit that they don't agree with or they don't think is correct or it's vandalism or what have you and it hasn't been automatically detected, they can see it there, notice that it is one of those things, and go in and edit it from there. But otherwise, aside from that, the interesting thing about Wikipedia is that unlike normal or other encyclopedias, manual encyclopedias, where any kind of edit or change has to undergo a process of revision before it becomes public, Wikipedia actually only revises edits after they have become public. As soon as you make a change, it instantly goes public, which means that all of these edits and vetting processes are retroactive. And that means that literally any time that you load up a Wikipedia page, you may be looking at a version of that page that has an edit on it that has not yet been reviewed.
And I think there's a statement, isn't there? That
there
says
is.
That?
There's a disclaimer on the Wikipedia website saying that it's not Wikipedia's fault if any of the information online on their website is valid or doesn't have any substantive sources or anything like that.
So let's step back from the actual entries and ask about the sort of corporate nature of Wikipedia. Is anyone making money with Wikipedia? And surely some of these people you've described, stewards and administrators and bureaucrats, are paid for the work they're doing.
They actually aren't paid at all. They're entirely volunteer, which is interesting on a whole other level because, first of all, you've got to be wondering what drives these people to do the things that they're doing. Is it common decency? Is it a desire for a reputation for being a good editor or a good steward? Is it just, you know, they want to make a difference? What's going on there? We don't know 100%, obviously, because the only way to investigate that sort of thing would be to do a survey. And, of course, they're all anonymous. Any of the credentials that any of these volunteers, even the stewards and the bureaucrats and the administrators, any of their credentials could be entirely fabricated. We don't actually know that they are who they say they are. We don't know that they have the degrees that they might say they have or anything like that, which is a very interesting kind of problem with any of those people.
Well, with all of these unknowns and the sense of mystery and darkness about some of the core features about Wikipedia, why do you think it is so often, especially but not only for students, the first place that people go to and certainly the first place that pops up? If I type in an author's name, such as Thomas Pynchon, boom, I get Wikipedia at the top of the Google list. What
right.
is going on?
Well, that's a very good question, and one I admittedly haven't done a ton of research into. But I'm guessing due to the fact that Wikipedia is not actually a corporation, it doesn't actually make any money. It's part of the Wikimedia project, which is all, you know, nonprofit. And the creator, Jimmy Wales, regularly, if you use Wikipedia enough, you may have seen his face and his name appear asking for donations because they do actually rely on those donations in order to keep the service running and all of their servers online. But I'm assuming because of the nonprofit nature of Wikipedia that they're not paying to be first on that list of Google search results, which means that Google is only showing them first because they're incredibly popular and they're often accessed. Now, as for why people regularly access them, that's another question that's very interesting. And the only answer I can give you is a couple weeks ago, the Dalai Lama was here at UBC, and I was sitting in the audience with my older sister, and she wanted to know something about the Dalai Lama, so she typed it into her phone very quickly. She just Googled the Dalai Lama, and the first result was the official webpage for the Dalai Lama. And she skipped over that result and went to the second result, which was the Wikipedia article on the Dalai Lama. And I, who hadn't yet explained to her what I was doing for my thesis, immediately turned to her, and she was kind of startled by this. And I said, now, why did you do that? What made you skip over the official website, which arguably is more credible, and go to the Wikipedia article? And she was kind of taken aback at first. She didn't really know why she was doing it. But she said, I guess what it comes down to is that I feel the Wikipedia article isn't as controlled. It's not as moderated. There isn't some kind of agenda going on with the Wikipedia article, is how she felt, and that's the reason that she was going there. So that's a whole other interesting question. We sort of perceive Wikipedia as being free and independent of anyone's sort of specific message. Due to its anonymous and collaborative nature, we assume that these agendas and things like that will be kept in check by the other contributors. Is that actually going on? I don't know. That's a very interesting question.
It seems to operate a lot on faith, a kind of, I won't say scholarly, not even academic, but a kind of intelligent faith that people are going to at least attempt to be correct, if not accurate, in their representations. But the issue of oversight comes in, which then raises questions of reliability and, I suppose, authenticity. When I read the entry on J.D. Salinger, mm-hmm. how do I know it's a fair representation of his life and not someone who has a particular slant and wants to present Salinger in you know, special way? There doesn't seem to be many checks or balances.
Exactly. And what it comes down to, I think, I use Fisher for my theoretical background on this, but you can use anyone. This is a very popular subject of debate. What I think it comes down to is a conflict between two different sets of ideals. And the first set of ideals is the democratic, and the second is expertise. And these two sets of ideals have been in conflict for a long time. So to give you an idea of what I mean, we rely on different individuals to have a certain amount of common sense, to have a certain amount of common decency, to have a certain amount of knowledge. And they are working together in essence, and that's what Wikipedia is built on, these democratic ideals. But we also expect a certain level of expertise, a certain level of people vetting that kind of common knowledge in order to make sure that the things that these people are coming up with consensus on are actually correct. And there is a conflict ongoing there because we want everybody to have a voice, and yet we want to qualify those voices with expertise and other credentials and things like that. And so what I think is going on is very interesting, this conflict between expertise and democracy. And that's what Wikipedia is, in my view, a battleground for those two sets of ideals.
So would you allow students, if you were teaching a course, allow them to use Wikipedia as a reference in one of their papers?
I don't think I would. I don't think I would allow them to use a reference. But what I have heard of, what I have heard of professors doing recently is actually saying to students, you can't cite Wikipedia, but you can go to Wikipedia, you can read through an article on something, and then use it as a jumping off point. Because even though we like to pretend that Wikipedia is this anarchic free place, free of control, it actually relies very heavily on three things. First of all, if you're going to be writing something on Wikipedia, it's got to be unique. It can't be covered somewhere else on the encyclopedia. It has to either merit its own entry or merit its own spot in an entry. It's got to be unique in that sense. Second of all, it's got to be notable. It has to be backed up by a certain number of independent sources and reliable sources. And there are a lot of different pages on Wikipedia that detail what sort of sources are acceptable and what sort aren't. But what it basically comes down to is anyone who's reviewing your contribution to Wikipedia has to decide that the sources you've cited are actually credible. And so this process and this rigorous process, because it really is one, they do adhere quite vehemently to this idea of everything needs a citation. Back in the early days, you might have been able to go and see citation needed, but nowadays you almost never see that. This rigorous practice of adhering to citation means that it might be a good idea for students to actually use Wikipedia articles as a good, as an almost suggested reading list, as a way of finding sources and starting on research that will then lead them to other things. So you wouldn't cite Wikipedia, but I have heard of a lot of professors saying, go to Wikipedia, see what they cite, and then try to use that.
Does Wikipedia actually solicit articles?
Do you mean it pay people to
No,
write articles?
Does it, they send you an email, Alex, we don't have an article on, the Trans-Canada Highway. Do you want to write one?
Right. No, they don't do that. As far as I'm aware, if they do that, they do it with no idea as to the person they're soliciting's credibility or credentials. So, for instance, it's possible that as a Wikipedia member, you may see a prompt saying, this article is a stub, there's not a lot of information here, perhaps you should expand it. But they're not saying that because you're an expert in that field, they're saying it because you happen to be looking at it right that moment.
So it seems to be a matter of interest. If I register, mm-hmm. And I have an account, and I am interested in the Trans-Canada Highway, I could just write an article, if there isn't one already up there, or augment an article that's already there, and nobody's going to say anything to me about it?
Exactly. Unless, of course, something that you do is not seen as being relevant or credible or unique, in which case it will likely be reverted. Which is one of the interesting things about Wikipedia. Apparently, it has a database of every single change that has ever happened to any of its articles. This huge wealth of past information, perhaps outdated, perhaps vandalized at one point, you know, they have copies of literally every change that's ever happened. And that's part of the reason that they've been so successful, is every time anyone comes in with a desire to deliberately mess things up, they can just revert those changes, and it's very easy for them to do that.
Well, let me ask you then in closing, is the scale of Wikipedia the very source of its undoing and its unreliability? It's so big, and there's so many contributors, and there's so many articles. People increasingly become skeptical about the validity of a Wikipedia entry, despite your very helpful and articulate description of how it happens. But mm-hmm. the scale of it seems to me the reason not to trust it.
I mean, that's a fair point, and that's one I actually write about in my thesis. But there are really two possibilities that I see, two big threats to Wikipedia as a as an organization, as an institution, as a product for us to use. And those two big threats are, one, this idea of the iron law of oligarchy. The iron law of oligarchy is this idea that every single organization will eventually develop an oligarchy that takes control away from whoever control is supposed to be allocated to, which is very interesting. And there's a very impressive article by a, I believe, a Russian scholar, but I can't pronounce his name and I don't remember it off the top of my head, talking about Wikipedia and whether or not it falls into this trap, into this iron law. And he says that Wikipedia, partly through its policies that are stated on the website and partly through its community values of being transparent and democratic and all of those things, has so far avoided falling into this supposedly inevitable fate. But it's not saying that it's immune. Rather, the study is saying that Wikipedia is resistant to this idea. So that's one path. Theoretically, if every steward operating in Wikipedia were to suddenly just declare, you know, total control over the project, they could theoretically take over. And I don't know that anyone has the authority to stop them. There may be some kind of a fail-safe built into the system, but I haven't seen it talked about anywhere. I would have to ask Jimmy Wales himself for that. So that's one possibility, is oligarchy. Another possibility is that Wikipedia, as you have suggested, just descends into a kind of muddle, a kind of everything goes on here and nobody cares. And the biggest obstacle to that so far is that every time somebody becomes disillusioned with Wikipedia or discouraged by Wikipedia and stops affecting any sort of review, any sort of rigorous processes by which articles are reviewed and things like that, anytime somebody becomes discouraged with that process, somebody else jumps in and takes over. Wikipedia is hugely popular, more so now than it has ever been, obviously, but its growth is actually quite staggering. I was reading an article from 2009 that said that the English version of Wikipedia had, you know, over 7 million articles, and now that number is much higher, probably double that amount at least. And I know the word counts. You can look them up on Wikipedia. They have a size comparison article that talks about Wikipedia when compared with other encyclopedias. And Encyclopedia Britannica has half as many words in it as the English version of Wikipedia alone.
That's quite remarkable. And I know you'll be startled when I tell you that I read something recently that in this just past month, October, they estimate Wikipedia includes over 33.7 million freely usable articles in 287 languages. And they have been written by over 49 million registered users.
Isn't that insane?
Yes, but you'll find it even more interesting because I got this information from Wikipedia.
Of course. Of course. One of my favorite things to do is when I'm reading a study of Wikipedia by an author, I'll see if that author has a Wikipedia page just to see if you know, there's a conflict of interest or if they're famous enough that they deserve one or something like that.
This is just remarkable. I'm sure we could talk for hours, but I want to thank you, Alex Sarah Davis, honors English student, for sharing with us his research thoughts and surprise about Wikipedia. And stay tuned for further guests that define the always exciting Faculty of Arts at UBC. Thanks again, Alex.
No problem. It was my pleasure.